Daylight saving ended over the weekend, and at least in the southern states, there's been a hint of a brisk chill in the air. And shorter and colder days means we might spend a bit less time outside. So less sun exposure, less vitamin D. And we're coming to understand more how important it is to maintain that over winter too. Perhaps you've wondered how scientists work out the optimum level of sunlight for our particular vitamin D needs, because they vary according to our skin type. Let's find out. Professor Rachel Neal is a Principal Research Fellow at QIMR Berghofer Medical Research Institute in Brisbane. Rachel, great to have you on the program.
Nice to be with you.
Let's just refresh our listeners' memories about the positive effects of being out in the sun. What does vitamin D do for us, and what happens if we don't get it?
Look, major vitamin D deficiency causes problems with our bones, soft bones, increasing the risk of fractures. So it's really important that we maintain enough vitamin D for that. But more recently, we now recognise that vitamin D also plays a very important role in things like maintaining the integrity of our immune systems, which is important for mounting a fight against infection, but also avoiding autoimmune diseases like multiple sclerosis. So we know that vitamin D is really important, and we need to maintain an adequate vitamin D level throughout the year.
Vitamin D is on the mind of a lot of our listeners, I know. Someone's texted in saying, I urge everyone to have a bone density test by the time they're 70, if not before. I was not aware of how important vitamin D is to bone health, and having fair freckly skin with frequent sunspots having to be removed, I avoid sun exposure, so I don't access natural vitamin D. So by the time I was referred for a bone density test to check my vitamin D levels, I already had such low levels that I had osteoporosis. Too late. Take the vitamin D, said Marg in Ballina. We'll get to the supplements in a moment. But there are mental health benefits too to getting regular sunlight, aren't there, Rachel?
There definitely are mental health benefits. And I think the important thing is we think of the sun, the main benefits, as being vitamin D, but there are a bunch of other benefits. The important thing, though, to distinguish is that we can get many of the other benefits. So, for example, for our circadian rhythms, which determine sleep and things like that, and for the mental health benefits, we don't have to have our skin uncovered by clothing. So we can be fully covered in clothing, go outside and get those benefits. But in order to get vitamin D and some of the other benefits of sunlight, you do need to have some skin out. And that's where we get that tricky problem of how do we avoid skin cancer, but also get the other benefits of sunlight.
Well, yeah, it was fascinating to see that it matters what your skin colour is, your skin tone, when it comes to sun exposure and how much you need. Can you walk us through that? What scientists know now about how much that affects your needs?
People with very deeply pigmented skin, so dark brown or black skin, are in a very fortunate position in some ways living in Australia, in that their risk of skin cancer is markedly lower than that for the rest of us. But it does take a bit longer to make vitamin D, and particularly for people living in southern states in winter, that can be a bit tricky because it's already a fair bit of time outdoors with skin exposed. And then if you double that time, for example, then it becomes hard to achieve.
Well, yes, I wasn't surprised to see that people with very, very fair, freckly skin need to be extremely careful about their sun exposure. But then, as you said, you know, it's about balancing the risks and benefits. How do people with very fair skin get around the skin cancer risk while still making sure they've got their, you know, their minutes up for vitamin D?
For people with extremely fair skin, we would argue that actually the benefits of sunlight are outweighed by the harms, and so we wouldn't recommend that people at high risk of skin cancer should actually try and get out in the sun with skin exposed. For them, to take a vitamin D supplement and accept that you may not get some of the other benefits. So it's really important that if it was all about vitamin D, we could just say to everybody, just cover up all the time and take a vitamin D supplement. But because the sun has other benefits when it hits our skin, that's not the complete story for everybody. But for people with very fair skin, we would say, look, just accept that you may not get some of those other benefits. Cover up all the time and take a vitamin D supplement.
That supplements issue, let's talk about that now with Professor Rachel Neal. She's a Principal Research Fellow at QIMR Berghofer Medical Research Institute in Brisbane. And Rachel, you've been involved with several major vitamin D trials in recent years, one of which was about supplements. Let's ask first how effective they are for those of us who might not get enough sun.
For people who don't get enough sun and are going to be otherwise vitamin D deficient, the supplements work really well. They're very, very good at maintaining sufficient vitamin D levels in our bloodstream. For people who are not vitamin D deficient, supplements might give a little bit of benefit, but not much. So, and vitamin D comes at a cost, so probably not necessary unless you're likely to be deficient.
What's the cost?
Look, It depends, obviously. There's different supplements and different doses, etc. They're not massively expensive. You can probably supplement for about $1 a day, but in a cost of living crisis, every dollar counts.
Oh, okay. I was thinking about potential harms, but you know, dollar cost, yes, of course, that's a significant thing.
Yeah. No, look, the harms of taking vitamin D supplements are very safe. So long as you're not taking a massive dose, if you're just taking the dose as recommended on the bottle in the pharmacy, it's fine.
That's good to know. You've been investigating too whether vitamin D could reduce the risk of cardiovascular events, which is a connection I don't think I would have made intuitively. How did you come to explore that and what did you find?
So we had 21,000 or so people that we randomly assigned half of them to take a vitamin D tablet once a month, a big dose once a month, and the other people to take a placebo. And we just followed them. They did that for 5 years, and we followed them up to find out who had a cardiovascular event, like a heart attack or a stroke, and who didn't. And we found some evidence, particularly in people who were at higher risk of developing cardiovascular events, that vitamin D supplementation might actually reduce the risk of having a heart attack.
So I understand that the main takeaway was, look, there might be some difference. We need more research. Is that the message you're sending out?
Look, it's always tricky with these sorts of studies when we've done a really big study, we're unlikely to do another really big study. So we just need to pull all the existing evidence together and make a recommendation, I think, on what we already have. And we wouldn't recommend that there's enough evidence that we should be recommending population-wide supplementation. So it comes down to people making an individual decision for themselves about whether or not they want to get some potential benefit, about whether or not for them the potential for benefit is worth the cost of and the effort of taking a supplement.
How did you come to think cardiovascular and vitamin D? What's the link there?
Vitamin D does all sorts of things in our body. It doesn't just look after calcium, which is its main thing. It has all sorts of effects on the way our cells grow and mature, and including in the cardiovascular system. It affects various different pathways. So there's reason to think that it might play an important role.
We're speaking with Professor Rachel Neal from the QIMR Berghofer Medical Research Institute in Brisbane, who's been looking deeply into various aspects of vitamin D and its effect on us. Rachel, I was playing around with this fantastic set of graphs that feature in your article on the Conversation website about the different durations of exposure that you need in different parts of the country at different times of year. So in autumn, you only need 5 minutes of exposed skin in Darwin, 10 minutes in Adelaide, but half an hour in Hobart. And then, you know, it changes in summer, it's 5 minutes almost everywhere. But the variation is huge at different parts of the season. And that's quite complicated for most of us. Is there a way to work out what's safe and what's optimal for us depending where we live?
You're right. It is a really complicated thing. So I think the general message for everybody is that in summer, as you say, 5 minutes or so wearing shorts and a t-shirt is more than enough time to maintain adequate vitamin D. But you do have to have your skin out, and that sun protection remains extremely important. For the southern states in winter, It actually, there's about 50% of people who appear to be vitamin D deficient in winter, because you need to be spending upwards of half an hour outside in shorts and a t-shirt in the middle of the day, which is not very achievable for a lot of people. So I think that people in southern states in winter, it's not unreasonable to say, well, look, if you're really not a pretty regular outdoorsy sort of person, then it's not unreasonable to take a supplement during a couple of months in winter.
Well, yeah, in winter, it looked like you needed almost an hour in Hobart in the middle of the day with exposed skin. It's like, that would be freezing. So yeah, you're going to have to come up with another solution. That clothing issue is interesting, isn't it? I mean, if you're in a colder part of the country, you're going to be rugged up. Is it enough to have your hands and face exposed?
No, particularly not in winter. You'd have to be outside for a very long time if all you've got exposed is your hands and face. So a lot of people, vitamin D is an interesting one in that it stays in our body for quite a long time. So a lot of people actually have got a fair bit heading into winter, and it tides them over through the winter. But a lot of people don't. They're pretty indoorsy during summer and autumn. So they've just got an okay-ish level heading into winter, and then they end up deficient in winter. So it's really about an individual thing. But to simplify it, I'll be recommending that people who are indoor workers and don't get a lot of time outdoors in those southern states should consider a supplement during winter time. It's not going to do any harm.
My dermatologist suggested that I should be wearing sunscreen all year round, every single day that I'm out in the sun, which is every day. Is that your view, Dr. Rachel Neal, particularly if you're, in a southern state in winter and not getting that much exposure anyway?
So guidelines say that you should be putting sunscreen on as part of your normal daily routine to the bits of you that are going to be always out, like your hands and face, on all days when the UV index is forecast to get to 3 or more at some point during the day. So for me, I'm in Brisbane, that's every day of the year. If you happen to be in Tasmania, that's every day of the year other than the 3 winter months. So no, it's not every single day, but it's every single day when the UV index is forecast to get to 3, which for the whole of Australia is at least 9 months of the year. So you should be as routine as brushing your teeth, really.
And should we stick with the SPF 50 or the high one that we use in summer during the winter months as well?
Yeah, there's no reason not to. I mean, SPF 30 plus is the current recommendation. It does a very good job. The main thing is to find a sunscreen that you like using and that you are able to put on liberally, because you can only get the SPF on the bottle if you've put it on, plenty of it on.
Yeah, I remember doing an interview once where they said, look, you're going to have a teaspoon each on your arms and another one on your face. And most people don't understand that. That was quite a wake-up call for me. I can't let you go, Rachel, without asking, how do you conduct this kind of research into things like sun exposure? I mean, does anyone risk a melanoma from going through a trial like this?
We don't do studies particularly to look at, can we cause people to get skin cancers? So I'm doing a study at the moment, for example, where we're looking at whether or not actually adhering to that recommendation of putting sunscreen on every single day could cause vitamin D deficiency. And we just recruit people and ask them to put sunscreen on every day or not. And then we measure their vitamin D levels throughout the year. And we're doing a study at the moment where we are exposing people to ultraviolet radiation, but we're exposing a tiny bit of the lower part of their back, and it's to a pretty low dose. And we're having a look at not can we cause them to get skin cancer, but what's happening to the DNA damage in their skin and how does that repair? But it's a tiny little bit, low dose exposures. So yeah, we ethically try not to cause skin cancers.
Yeah, I imagine the grants committee would be very, very careful about that. Rachel,
Absolutely. It's
been fascinating exploring a little bit about our patchy understandings of vitamin D today with you. Thanks so much for your time.
You're very welcome. Have a good day.
You too. Professor Rachel Neal is a Principal Research Fellow at QIMR Berghofer Medical Research Institute in Brisbane.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.